Thank you, Maureen. It's wonderful. I hope you dance. Carl Sagan is probably the most famous American astronomer. He pioneered the search for extraterrestrial intelligence and wrote a book called Contact. The movie was out several years ago, 1997. But there's something he said that has always stuck with me. A religion, old or new, that stresses the magnificence of the universe as revealed by modern science might be able to draw forth reserves of reverence and awe hardly tapped by the conventional faiths. Sooner or later, such a religion will emerge, he goes on to say. Well, I believe that religious science is such a religion because it not only stresses the magnificence of the universe, it stresses the magnificence of the individual. What do we have to offer that is hardly tapped by conventional faiths? Well, in broad terms, conventional religions offer rules and regulations in regards to their relationship to God and the universe. Whereas we teach a life principle, a marked difference in approach. We teach a principle that states the mind of the individual is some part of the mind of God. Therefore, our relationship to God is a reflection of our relationship to that something within us that at the same time is bigger than we are. Each individual gets to decide what that relationship is and how they're going to interact with it. And we have our all individual ways of reacting to what we perceive to be that truth. Dr. Holmes wrote, "The science of mind is the study of the principle of being." What could be more effective and more worthy of reverence and awe than a teaching that's based on existence itself, rather than the particulars that we might see in that existence, but existence itself? We're studying a principle of cause and effect that reveals the way the universe functions as a universe, but it also reveals the way we function as individuals. Our focus, of course, isn't on the physical universe. It's on the mental universe that perceives the physical universe. That's you. That's me. The principle functions in the mental universe, however, in a very particular way. That way can be stated by saying, the experiences that human beings have are the result of what their minds do to themselves. That's the science of mind. I like the idea that in Chuck's blessing of the children of the world, he rather insinuated that there were maybe other planets, other places for children to play and to be. I believe that's true. Places that we've not trained ourselves to see, but places that exist. And personally, I'd like to think that there are other planets where children exist. Don't know what that satisfies in me exactly, but it does satisfy something. The point is, as individuals on this planet, at this time, in this universe, the experiences that I have are the result of what my mind does to me. Now, that's a frighteningly simple, but grandly broad and wonderful concept for me to consider. That my life is all about what my mind is doing to itself, not what my mind is doing to my religion or other people or my boss or anything else, but what my mind is doing to itself. Now, why is this so? Because that's where the principle of cause and effect is, in my mind, in your mind. Our minds are cause. Our experiences are effect. Well, the law of cause and effect seems to run through everything in life, doesn't it? We're studying the part that we play in regards to this law, this law of cause and effect. And what we've discovered, as I have been speaking about for the last 3 weeks, is that we are cause. Our conscious mind is the cause of our experience. It goes without saying, then, that we'll want to use this law in the most effective way, providing the law with the mental equivalent of the experience that we want to have. I looked in our Science of Mind textbook in a chapter called Mental Equivalence, and I'm convinced that if you want something to happen that doesn't seem to be happening, read that chapter in the Science of Mind textbook. And if you haven't bought the textbook yet, buy it today. It's a wonderful chapter because it tells you this. Of all that you glean from the universe and religion and philosophies in the world, trying to arm yourself with the strength to move forward and experience what you want to experience, what you're going to find out is if you don't supply the mental equivalent of the experience you want, it ain't going to happen. And the book in that chapter, Mental Equivalence, explains it so clearly. Well, that's your job. And in my life, it's my job. We're not here, then, to adhere to religious dogma. We're here to be conscious initiators of our experience, the experiences that we want to have. And there's a big difference between aligning ourselves with religious dogma and to be a conscious initiator of our own experience. Adhering to dogma is much easier, and it takes no imagination and requires little, if any, creative thinking. All it requires is obedience. And if there's one thing I found out about religious scientists or people who are attracted to it, is they're not very good about being obedient. Well, in fact, I think religious scientists and people who are attracted to our teaching are rebels, rebelling against not necessarily old traditions, because some old traditions are wonderful, but rebelling against old beliefs, false beliefs. When things go well, we don't believe that we are rewarded any more than when things don't go well, we believe that we are punished. We believe that we are conscious initiators of our own experience. And you know what that takes? Several things. For one thing, it takes mental resourcefulness. It calls on our ability to reason. We ask ourselves, once we realize this is the way it is, what more do I need to know? What more do I need to know about this situation? We ask ourselves, what is the best approach? What's the best attitude to have? What's the best reaction to this experience I just had? Why do we ask these questions? Because we know there's more to every situation than that which can be seen. You may say, well, that's growing up. When you get a little older, you realize that what you see isn't necessarily what you get. What you see is simply what you see. Well, that may be true. I think maturity allows one to see into life maybe a little further. But this science, the science of mind, allows us to realize what it is that is the more. What is the more that may not be seen? Well, what we find out is the more that cannot necessarily easily be seen is the presence of God in every situation, waiting for the individual to accept that presence, to allow that presence to work through their individual minds to create a mental equivalent of the desired experience. It also takes tenacity, being a conscious initiator of one's own experience. Why tenacity? Because it takes more than one thought to create anything. It takes the development of consciousness, or what I just call the mental equivalent. And we keep on providing that mental equivalent until we demonstrate. Being conscious initiators takes courage. There are times when it's hard to do. I won't ask for a show of hands, but I know we've all had those times when we say to the science of mind, "Phooey, you don't work. I'm in the wrong religion. I'm in the wrong church. Well, you're not in the wrong church, but you may think I'm in the wrong religion, but that's not true, you see. We have that reaction because we don't have a spiritual practice that we do every single day. So when things seem to be overwhelming, we may fall back on the idea that it's hard to get through life. There are times when what we're looking at seems overwhelming. Times when experiences seem to stack up one after the other, telling us there's something wrong with us. Well, I know a gal who said to me about a month ago, "You know, my father died 2 months ago. My mother died a month ago. My sister died 2 weeks ago. What am I next?" And I thought to myself, this is a real concern. Her experiences are stacking up. And she asked me, she said, "This is my experience. Did I cause this experience? Did I cause my father and mother and sister to die?" And I said, "You know, I've asked myself that same question, but I realized it was a pompous stand to take, that I have the power by some machinations of my mind to cause anyone else to die." "Well, I don't have that power, and neither do you." She said, "I didn't think so, thank God." Well, what was she doing? She was honestly looking at her own experiencing and asking the question, why, how? How does this thing called life work? That's why we're in the science of mind, because we ask the question, how does this thing called my life work? And how do I work it better? How do I make myself happier? How, when things seem to stack up, one problem after another, what do I arm myself with to cut through it all and to press on with life? Well, ultimately, what you find out, there's only one thing to arm yourself with. And it's, we say it over and over again, but we say it over and over again for a reason, so that one day will come when we get it, not at a religious level, but at an inner gut feeling. The thing you have to arm yourself with to deal with the issues of your life is God. If you want to call that God divine mind, spirit, whatever you want to call it, that's the only thing that will really do it. And I think that when I came to a point where this wasn't a religious truth that I needed to accept, it was just something that was. Whether I belonged to any religion or not, I had to rely on something in me that was bigger than my experience. That was God. Something transcendent of all experience. That was God. Something that if I learned how to rely on it, how to use that power effectively, I could win in every situation. And by win, I mean my reaction to every experience of life would serve me well. I've learned since that time how to create the mental equivalent of what I want. And how if I don't create that mental equivalent, I don't deserve to have what I want, because that's the only way it can happen. Well, this also, becoming the conscious initiator of our own experience, requires imagination. You know, it calls on our ability to imagine something better for ourselves. When I heard Tim's treatment this morning, he used the word imagine, to imagine something better. That's what treatment really is. Treatment is starting with what you're confronting and then going to a higher plane and imagining something better. What's going on in your life that you're stuck at the level of the experience rather than imagining the next step, imagining something better? We say, "My career's stuck." No, if your career's stuck, it's because you're stuck. "What I want to do, this project is stuck." Well, again, it's because you're stuck. You're not providing the principle of cause and effect within you. I get better as we go along. that's okay. Don't I get better as we go along? Because I haven't provided the system of cause and effect with the mental equivalent of the experience I want. So I'm apt to sit back and say, well, it's not happening in my life because it wasn't meant to be. You mean it to be, and you create a mental equivalent that causes it to be, and there ain't no other way. When I got that there was no other way to do this, that I can push and shove and cause a certain amount of good in my life, and you can, you know, because you're all power. And we cannot rely on God. We can go right to what we think is our own individual place in the universe and do some shoving and pushing and cajoling and manipulating and cause something. But if it's going to stay, if it's going to be good, if it's going to be healthy, there's a way to do it. There's a way to approach it. Accept God at the center of your being. Provide that power called the power of cause and effect in you with the mental equivalent of what you want, and you're home free. But that requires tenacity, the ability to think for yourself in a world that would be delighted to think for you if you let it. In a world where we're surrounded by people who resolutely disagree with our teaching. This last week, I was in a waiting room with a couple other men, and it got to the point in the conversation where one man asked another, "What do you do?" And they, "What do you do?" Well, it got around to me, and I said, "I'm a minister." "What fell?" Oh, he's back. "You believed us." Yay! "What do you do?" he said, and to me. And I said, "Well, I'm a minister." "What faith?" And I said, "Religious science." "Oh, Scientology, I know that." And I said, "No, not Scientology." "Christian science?" I said, "No." I said, "Religious science." "Well, what's religious science all about?" You've been asked this question, I'm sure. And I started to explain it to him. And what I said isn't important is the fact that he was nonplussed from the start to the finish. He wasn't accepting any of it. Now, I don't know what his faith was, but he went on to say, "Well, what is prayer like if you have God within? Are you praying to God?" I said, "No, our prayer is affirmative. Because we accept God within, the power of creativity within, our prayer then cannot be one of supplication. It has to be one of affirmation. So our prayer takes that form." He still wasn't very excited about it all, but we quickly changed the subject and we started talking about his wife, which was really a subject everyone wanted to talk about. A Pentecostal minister once Sunday stood at the podium and he said, "I'm going to talk this morning about healing. Does anyone need a healing in church this morning?" And a man in the back of the church raised his arm. He walked up to the front and he says, "I could use help with my hearing." So the minister said, "Put both of your fingers in each ear, my child." So the man put both fingers in each ear. And then he prayed to God. And then he prayed to Jesus. And he prayed harder and he prayed harder. And when he was done, he said to the man there, "Now, how's your hearing?" And the man said, "I don't know. It's not till Tuesday." Jay, you can use that one. Science of mind, well, the story, that was, of course, a joke, but but the other thing about the men meeting and the religion wasn't, and I'm sure you've had that experience. Science of mind tells us that there's one mind, and we're a part of that mind. It's the mind of God, or whatever you want to call the determining power of the universe, the creative power of the universe, and calling it God is really not important. And that we can use our mind to fulfill our idea of life, to make ourselves happy. You see, adhering to dogma takes followers. Proving a principle takes leaders. Leaders in that we're not going to follow any code, but the code that identifies our minds as the deciding factors in our lives. In his essay on self-reliance, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Nothing at last is sacred but the integrity of your own mind." Yes, our minds are sacred because they are made out of the life force itself. The word sacred means that. Of God. But we can use our minds in many ways. And sometimes we unwittingly choose thoughts that cause problems. We don't do this intentionally, of course, but we do it. We do it, I don't know, is it because we can? Sometimes I think that the problems we cause are problems that let us know we're alive because we haven't gotten used to experiencing life without problems. So the problem causes us to be disgruntled and tense and causes all kinds of emotion. And in so doing, lets us know, by God, I'm alive. I've got a problem. Well, we have to get used to having no problems, if that's what we desire. The dictionary defines the word problem by writing this: any question or matter involving doubt, uncertainty, or difficulty. That's all the problem is. Not a reflection of what we are, just a reflection of the way we've used our minds. Problems are just something we have to deal with. That's all. And if thinking or the lack of thinking caused the problem, then thinking can solve the problem. The principle of being was put within us so that we deal with everything. Not just the major things in life or the small things, but everything. And the only way to do this is to address the way we're using our own minds. The way we're using our own minds. Don't make the issue any more complicated than that. Make it that simple. It's not about anything or anyone else. It's not about changing someone's opinion. It's not changing something at work. That's not what it's about. It's about changing what's going on in our own minds. And amazingly enough, because we're living in a system of cause and effect, when we change the cause, what's going on in our own minds, somehow it changes what's going on at work. Somehow it changes the person that we want to change. And often we realize that they don't have to change at all. That the change we've established in our own minds is sufficient. I've noticed that I can think a negative thought, think in terms that are negative about something, create a negative experience, and then have a negative reaction to the experience I've created. That's a double negative, not a good way to use mind. How do I solve that problem? I must intercede on my own behalf, realize that I've not only created a problem, but I'm reacting badly to it, and I'm sustaining that problem in my life. Just remember, your problems don't define you. They may define your experience, but they don't define you. You're defined by your intrinsic nature, the point at which universal mind expresses as an individual. You know, that fact alone, the fact that you individualize the very mind of God, as Carl Sagan says, should draw forth reserves of reverence and awe hardly tapped by conventional faiths. Well, the thing we have to remember is whether it's not having the kind of money we want to have, not being as healthy as we want to be, not having the kind of relationships we'd like to have, not having the job we'd like to have, not being able to think of ourselves the way we'd like to. The truth is, none of these things identify us. All of them can be changed by the way we think about each one of them. The amount of money you have in your life, if it's not enough, you can change that by the way you think of yourself, the way you think of money itself. So we look at our problems as just things that have to be dealt with. And how should we deal with them? By consciously asserting authority over them rather than letting ourselves be overwhelmed by them. So our approach is this: don't let your experience of life or any individual experience define you. Instead, consciously assert authority over that experience. If we don't assert authority over our experience will assert authority over us, or at least it'll seem like it is. So we deal with our problems by using the principle of mind, the principle of cause and effect, effectively, by realizing that what we believe is shaping our lives. Now, I talk a lot about the power of thought, and I still back up that concept. But you know what? Because our beliefs causes us to think what we think, to have the attitudes what we have, our beliefs are very important. If you don't believe in yourself, and we all know what that means, if we don't believe in ourselves, most of our attitudes, opinions, the way we deal with people, the way we go to meetings, the way we treat our friends and relatives will reflect it. And we'll probably be too defensive at times, overly apologetic at times, easily manipulated most of the time, and separated from the rest of the world as well. And it's not so much that we shouldn't think thoughts that cause us not to believe in ourselves, it's that we need to change the belief that causes us to think these thoughts in the first place. Beliefs are ideas that we believe are true. If we believe that someone else, for instance, is responsible for our unhappiness, think about you. And if you right now are sitting here thinking about somebody that makes you very unhappy, I want to give you a key for life. It is your reaction to this person, your relationship to the person, not their relationship to you, that makes you unhappy. If you can remember that, you'll be happy for the rest of your life, because you're not letting or believing someone else has the power to make you unhappy. No one has the power to make you unhappy, just as no one has the power to make you happy. It's the way you think about that person that makes you happy, the way you think about that person that makes you unhappy. Well, knowing what we believe, who we are, what we want, and why we want it can be like a beacon of light on a clear night, guiding us to the fulfillment of our desires. Can also be like 20 miles of bad road. The problem is most of us aren't aware of what we believe. We're walking a road that we don't realize we ourselves have created. And we keep thinking the same thoughts, walking the same old direction, not only confirming that direction and the road itself, but supporting it, making the road wider and more easily accessible to us. Not realizing that by so doing, we're creating the same experience over and over and over again. Don't you get just tired of some of your experiences? Say, well, here it comes again, the same old experience. I'm reacting the same old way. They're doing the same old thing. And I end up with the same old demonstration. Well, you got to change your thought. But changing our thought, though it's necessary, is not as important as changing the belief that causes us to think the way we do. We all know the road we've taken, and we all have a pretty good grasp of the idea that we ourselves have created that road. But wouldn't it be nice to be able to identify the beliefs that allowed us to create the road in the first place, and to be able to examine them impersonally and without judgment? Of course it would. I want to do that with you this morning. There are so many self-defeating beliefs, and I've identified the few in myself and in people I've known over my lifetime that I think can help us. Do you believe in any of the following? Because I'll tell you, if you have these beliefs as a belief, it will manifest in your life in the way you're thinking, the way you're feeling. The first one is the belief, I can't change, that's just the way I am. That's the hardest point in mind to make any changes from. It's very hard to assert influence over yourself if you have that belief that you cannot change, that's just the way you are. How about this belief? My feelings are natural reactions to life. They're something I cannot control. Well, once you find out that there are certain beliefs maybe you want to change, don't defend the very beliefs you know you want to change. You don't have to defend them. Let them die a natural death and replace them with something you want to believe. What would I want to replace with, I can't control my feelings, I can't control the way I think? Well, it's obvious. I can control the way I think. How about I can control my feelings? I'm afraid that if I do, I'll be a robot. Well, some people believe this. This is often the belief of a person who is afraid of mind control. Science of mind isn't mind control unless by mind control you mean controlling your own mind. All right, she makes me happy, she makes me unhappy. I've covered the idea that you create your own experience. How about the belief, well, you can't have your cake and eat it too? I've often thought, then why cake? I love cake. And every so often I make a cake. It's usually sort of on this angle. But nonetheless, it's cake to me. But I wouldn't bake the cake unless I could eat it. So if you believe that, well, I can create money, but my past history with money doesn't allow me to spend it freely. Well, that's horse pucky. It's just simply not true. But you believe it's true. If you do, then you're going to have a problem with money. Some people were just not meant to have it all. Do you have that belief? Some people were just not meant. I was talking to Jackie and Lou about their trip to Nicaragua. And they were talking about how there's so many poor people in Nicaragua and how indeed they're inevitably sweet people. They found, as I did in Mexico, the same phenomenon. Poor people who don't have a nickel to their name, scraping for any good they can possibly, but the sweetest people you want to meet. What's the connection here? Is that a trade-off with the universe? I would never suggest that it was. Rather than looking at from the dark side, I look at it from the light side. What can I do to help these people? What can I do to help anyone, anywhere, accomplish anything that I think is right and good? Well, if you believe that some people weren't meant to have it all, you probably believe that you weren't meant to have it all. But who makes that decision? You do. This may seem to be so because of your past history, but it ain't so. Each person negotiates their own experience of life. I was meant to have it all. Say it with me. I was meant to. Now say it like you mean it. I was meant to have it. Now is that true? Yeah, it is. It really is true. The creative power created you to be an expression of itself. Therefore, you individualize the power that has it all, that is it all. So you were meant to have it all. But if you don't believe that, then guess what? It's like being in a candy store, God's candy store, where God says you can have all this candy, and you go up and take this little jelly bean and this little piece of candy when God says, well, I offered all of it to this one, but it doesn't think it believes it deserves it. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there. Is that one of your beliefs? Then you believe in competition. And competition can cause you to focus, put your mind in a place where it's focusing on where it doesn't belong. People who are optimistic aren't being realistic. Well, that may be true as far as the real world. But remember when we were talking about something that exists but maybe just can't be seen? But can be seen with that third eye within that says, this optimistic feeling I have comes from my relationship with the transcendent power of God. It doesn't come. I'm not trying to get it from what I see. And then the last belief, I was happier before I knew this science of mind. I've heard people say this. I was better off before I knew about this law of cause and effect. If you have ever said that to yourself, or I'm ringing a bell in your mind, it's probably because you don't have a spiritual practice that you hang on to, that you do every day. Well, if believing any of these things is our problem, what must we do? Consciously assert authority over the belief without judgment and change it. You're the believer, not the belief. And if you talk yourself into something, you can talk yourself out of it. Once you're aware that you have a belief that you want to get rid of, then you must present to yourself why you want to get rid of it. Why do you have to do that? Because you're intelligent. You won't change beliefs any more than I will just by saying, I'm going to change this belief. Give yourself a reason for changing the belief, and usually the reason we give ourselves, the most valid reason is, this belief is not serving me. It's keeping me back, withholding the very good that I want to experience. And then replace it with a healthier belief. Where there is struggle, poverty, hostility, indecision, restriction, lack, and limitation of any kind, there's a belief that needs to be changed. And that's what we do here at LACRS. For every Sunday, a different concept is talked about. Every treatment that is given. I'm so proud of our practitioners who speak from their heart, each and every one in a different way. Did you hear Tim's treatment? I've never heard those words spoken in a treatment for, even before, even Chuck's blessing of the children world. I'm so proud that they're students of mine, but they're really students of life. I don't have the right to claim them. But our practitioners, our ministers, remember Marianne Moon, one of the finest teachers of science of mind anywhere. We exist to teach this science in a way that causes people to address themselves, to be able to change their belief into what they want to believe in, causing them to think the thoughts that they should be thinking, and then change their experience of life. American philosopher William James wrote, "Believe that your life is worth living, and your belief will help create the fact." Well, believe that you're worth more, being paid more than you're being paid, regardless of how much you're being paid. Believe that you're lovable, regardless of how much love you have in your life. Believe that you're healthy. Believe that you deserve all the good that God has in store for any human being, and you shall be creating it. You can't avoid using this principle of being any more than you can avoid being a part of the play of life upon itself. Dr. Holmes says it's the nature of the principle to work, and it's your nature to work it. We may think of this principle as a monumentally exalted something that exists to remind us of how imperfect we are and put us in our place, but neither is true. This principle in you doesn't exist to accuse you of anything, get you to change your ways, to browbeat you, make you wrong, frighten you, or coerce you into doing anything, even being free of your own problems, any more than God wants you to be free of your own problems. God doesn't think of you that way as having problems. That's our own belief, because God, thou God, believes in you as perfect. So divine principle, like divine mind, leaves us alone to discover ourselves. The thing that a lot of people don't like about religion is that it's always making them feel bad about something. This objection, you know, can even be taken into the science of mind teaching. Just takes another form. They're always telling me to take responsibility. They're always telling me to change my thinking. They're always telling me to be more generous. They're always telling me that my beliefs are working against me. Get this, I don't know what your beliefs are. Do you? Listen to the way you talk. Listen to the way you think. Listen to the way you negotiate anything with anyone and realize that all these thoughts, all these negotiations come from the motherboard of your mind called your belief. But I do know, though I don't know your beliefs, that your beliefs, just like mine, can run havoc, ravage over our lives, or keep us right where we are. The only person that can change what we think, what we believe, is the person who thinks and believes. Demand to have healthy thoughts about yourself. Demand of your mind to start imagining a better life, regardless of how wonderful your life is. Demand right thinking of yourself. Don't let yourself get away feeling sorry for yourself or feeling guilty about anything, or not accepting that you're enough. You are enough. But you know what? You got to know it. If your self-image needs upgrading, then get busy and deal with it. Accept your place in the universe as the conscious initiator of your own experience. Stop blaming anyone for anything and rise like a phoenix into the full authority of being the point at which God initiates the kind of experience you want by your providing that God, that principle, with the mental equivalent of the experience you want. That's the way to get free. Thank you very much.
Thank you.